Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens, and I'm stoked to be here. We're going to call this episode 243. I think we're in the episode. We're in the 40s, so we're proud about that as we're starting our second season here. And I've got a very special guest today, a guy I consider a friend and I've had some good experiences with, Peter Menino. Peter, how are you?
Doing good. I consider you a good friend as well and, you know, appreciate our interactions. Yeah. Throughout my career and then some.
Yeah, so I met you as I was an equipment rep, and it's funny, yep. I was flying into, I don't know if you know how I got your number and everything, and this is how I kind of tracked you down, is, and I'm forgetting his name right now, but I think it was your goalie coach at DU, and I was flying into North Dakota, and I happened to be on a plane with them, and He was asking me what I was doing on the plane or whatever, because it's just one of those small, you know, 20-seaters going from Minnesota to North Dakota. And he was asking me about, you know, I was going there to sell Brian's equipment to the goalies at North Dakota. And you weren't at Denver University yet, but they knew you were coming, and they wanted me to make sure you were taken care of. So, anyway, so that's how I got to know
there
you.
There we go.
Yeah, so that was... It was a good introduction. I tracked you down and, you know, got to start making your awesome Brian's gear for back in the day. Have you, do you keep track of what guys are wearing these days? Do you watch some of the, like, do you keep track of any of the equipment these days?
Yeah. You know, when you're involved in hockey, at any capacity and then in coaching, and then you have your particular field, those telling my cousin, who's the general manager here in Des Moines the other day, I said, you're forever learning, you know, and you got to stay up to the times, because hockey changes. We all know it's fast. There's less sighting, all this stuff. It's, you know, the cliche stuff that everybody talks about, but it's the truth. And it changes within 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. And then when you get into specific positions like goaltending, I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's really changed.
Yeah, you don't have boots on skates anymore, or the cowling on skates anymore, you know, the pads are, they're all different. So I always keep in track on that, what guys are using, seeing the brands, but obviously I always have a soft spot for the stuff I used with you and all that. But no, I think you have to, or you're going to get passed behind on that stuff.
Do you still put on the pads every once in a while, go out and take shots?
You know, I did... It did not last year at Miami, and I did not at Omaha. So the 2 years of college, I didn't. Point being, you're just so busy. You know, there was so much stuff going on between recruiting, you know, prepping for practices, defensemen, you know, practices, splits, whatever. You constantly have something going. When I was in juniors in the USHL, I did. Thanks, hon. I did put them on. I was in pretty good shape there, and I would do goalie sessions and throw the stuff on. And it was awesome, Jay, because you were able to, like, firsthand do things with the guys. And I remember, one of our goalies, Daniel Vladar, he's a third rounder to the Boston Bruins. And he was like, oh, I like what you did there, this, and that. And I was like, oh yeah, that was something just a habitual thing that you do. And I didn't realize. And then I started to kind of work things with them one-on-one, but actually doing it, you know, with the gear on. So I would like to, I just hope I have the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, let's talk about all that. Let's talk about what's taking up all your time. But first I want people to know, one of the reasons I'm having you on the show is you have a connection to Utah. You played here for the Utah Grizzlies.
Yep.
Briefly. And, I've got a story around that too, but, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're from Michigan, right? And tell us about growing up and what's that?
I grew up in West Bloomfield, and then we moved to Farmington Hills. My parents are still there, and my family, so very much based out of Michigan for that part.
When did you get into hockey?
Right off the hop. My dad was a big hockey fan. He worked. He never played sports. He just was always busy, kind of doing his. He had lawn mowing, family. Had a pizza business. He was always delivering pizzas, doing lawn mowing, and then he inherited, being the third generation, he's a produce purveyor, middleman, up at 3 a.m. downtown Detroit. basically loading up a truck, getting orders, and then distributing them. So he loved sports, loved hockey. My two uncles played it, and he got me on CH when I was like 3-4 years old, and my sister figure skated. So it was young. I definitely skated right away.
Okay, and then you came up. You play high school in Michigan. Doesn't everybody?
I did not.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, everybody in Michigan is a hockey player, though, right? It seems like that's the predominant sport.
Michigan's they call it whatever, the debate hockey town, right, and whatnot, but unbelievable draw there for Michigan. I mean, you have Mecca, Minnesota, the East Prep schools, and then Michigan's right there between them and Illinois for producing players for the United States, and great travel programs. I just say this just based on facts, right? Is those youth programs, CompuWare, Little Caesars, Honey Baked, etc., all of them Oakland, they're the route to get the best exposure when it comes to Michigan. Michigan high school is good. Like, I've committed kids from college. I drafted them to USHL. Great players. It's just far and few rather than the travel route, just a higher level.
Right. And what did you play when you were there?
Played travel. I was on the first ever, and you're familiar, like the Honey Baked travel team there. I was on their first or second year when they played with their age group. I jumped on that team, and I was on Honey Baked all the way until I kind of jumped around a little bit between Cleveland and then went up to junior hockey. So I did play local, like a local club, played for Fraser Falcons for a year, and then went to Honey Baked and did that for a while. So
yeah,
those
teams you mentioned are the teams that everybody else kind of gauges themselves about, right? Like for us as Utah teams, we're like, our teams will go to tournaments and we'll say, hey, they played Honey Baked, or they played Little Caesars,
right,
or they played Shattuck. And they played these teams, or they played a team that played that team that barely lost to that team. And that's kind of, that's kind of how we gauge ourselves. Somebody's second cousin, whatever. It's, those teams that you're mentioning, yeah, they're legendary. And that's, so you play Honey Baked, and then it's time to go play juniors. And I know you didn't go right to the USHL, right? You had a step first?
No. Yeah, so like I said, and just to real quickly go back on that, it's amazing, like you said, being a part of like Honey Baked, and I give Lou Schmidt, he was my, basically first coach when I hit travel hockey, and their family like owned Honey Baked Ham, the ham company, and then he started up Honey Baked hockey. And just like you said, now today people are gauging off of all of their youth programs, and his son Louie and I were very close, we still are in many ways, but it's really cool to see the passion that people can put into it. And it still goes on today to gauge against them, in the world of hockey. But, I did that. I did move 1 year. One year I played up. I played Little Caesars, went back to Honey Baked. And then I made a decision. It was kind of wacky. But one summer, my parents and I, we were like, I think we're going to move on from Honey Baked. And we played a couple tournaments in the summertime with the Cleveland Barons. And I got to know Tommy Goble, Danny Fritchie, a bunch of those guys, not leaving anybody's name out, but all of a sudden became really close with them, started playing like 2-3 summer tournaments, and they were like, hey, like, come play for us next year. And this was crazy, Jay. Like, I didn't even know if it was NCAA approved or whatever, but they were like, stay in Michigan your freshman year, practice in Michigan, and then fly out on Tuesday nights to come practice with us. And then we'll just meet you on the weekends for games. And I was like,
wow.
And I started to become like best buddies with those guys in the team. And my parents were like, okay. And they had a deal. They hooked up the flights and all this stuff. And I did that. And then from the next year after that, I was like, I'm going to move out to Cleveland and play there with the Barons organization, because the people were awesome and it was the same level. And we could go up against Honey Baked and try and beat them, and stuff like that. I was seeing a lot of Shaw. And so I did that, and then I climbed into the junior ranks with the Pittsburgh Forge, North American Hockey League. And Jason Kohler, former GM of the Youngstown Phantoms, I think he's with the Tri-City Storm now, the USHL. I give him a lot of credit. I say his name because him and his crew, they found me, they brought me to Pittsburgh my halfway through my senior year, and they gave me a shot. And from there, I climbed from there. So.
Okay. So you spend half a season and then a full season in Pittsburgh. And it's funny because you and I talked about this a little bit, but that's when you come across – is that the first time you come across Jordan Parisi, who we had on the show last week?
Yes. Yep, Jordan came in that first year. They brought him in. I forget the time frame he was there, but he was with us for a little bit. And I remember hanging out with him, practicing with him. I mean, him and I were like, you know, the ultimate competitive goalies, like kind of even, I'm sure, looser in technical terms, but we wanted to win no matter what. And having him in practice and kind of bringing in a third guy up the competition, right? Because everybody, you know, you shake the cage a little bit.
Right.
But he was great. He was great. Yeah, we hung out. I remember hanging out at parties, just stuff like that. And he was a really good guy. And then obviously our paths crossed later on in college.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. I love that. I love that. And Jordan was, I was telling you, I was going to have Jordan on the show today, and then he ended up getting a interview or a job thing he had to go to today. So it kind of sucked because it would have been really fun to have you guys talk about that together, because we talked about the game 7 he lost back in the day, but or, you know, the championship games he lost. You're on the other end of that. So we'll talk about that in a bit. So you do the NA, and then it's, you know, you do two seasons in the or a season and a half with Pittsburgh, and then how do you end up in the USHL?
Yeah, so the half a year, they said, we're going to get you 10 games in. We want to get you experienced. You're going to be, you know, you'll have the opportunity to be our starter next year if all goes well. I said, awesome, you know, and I was excited to move to Pittsburgh. Played the half a year. We lost in the national championship game. And the next year, you know, I came back and battled hard and was able to do well. We won the national championship, won the regular season as well against the Texas Tornado, which is a legendary organization.
Yeah.
And so we won that. And so during that year, I committed to the University of Denver. That's where I talked about Jason Kohler and the whole staff there, Kev Constantine, Chris Iams, John Mechanic, Jay Veraday, like unbelievable people. And to have the opportunity from them, and then getting the exposure from from the school that I went on to play college hockey, which was special, you know, and I really owe them that. And what happened was, though, that last year, if you remember, Jay, the NAHL, the USHL went tier one, so they basically were going to take care of everything, you know, go on par with the OHL, CHL, all the other leagues. And the NA couldn't handle all those expenses, you know, like all the equipment, all the housing fees, like everything went on board. So the NA lost a bunch of franchises. Pittsburgh was one of them.
Okay.
Pittsburgh, CompuWare, the Chicago Freeze, Danville left and went to USHL, Springfield. It was a major landscape change in the NAHL. And there used to be the AWHL. And that combined with the NAHL, Billings, Bismarck, all those teams came into the NA, and that's where everything changed. And so at that point, this is crazy. Like, we literally finished our national championship game. I remember walking off with the guys, the trophy, and you had USHL teams there shaking our hand before we jumped on the bus. And I'm like going, what is going on here?
Wow.
You know, and they knew kind of even before we heard rumors, but we were so young. We're like, sure, we're going to be back next year. It's going to be fun. And they were like shaking their hand, being like, we're going to be poised to go after you to bring you to the USHL, you know, and that's kind of what happened. Is that summer, I knew Pittsburgh was going to be folded or they were going to be bought by a different franchise. I think they went to Toledo, and my coach was gone and the whole relationship was gone. And I decided to listen to these, you know, multiple USHL offers, and ended up signing a tender and going to Tri-City in the USHL.
Wow! See, I didn't know any of that history. That's crazy. I didn't know that. That's the year. I mean, I knew that some of that had happened, but I didn't realize it was like such a hard transition. Like all of a sudden, this happened and teams are gone. So that's got to increase the USHL has to become a lot better at that point too, to pick up the best of the best out of that other league, because sometimes that kind of dilutes a league, right? If you have players that should be in that league playing in other leagues. So.
That was the massive change, and that kind of switched everything. And the NA was really, because it was kind of like the pecking order, you know, USHL, and then NAHL was right on par. I mean, our Pittsburgh team, I think there was only one kid that didn't have a college scholarship. And I say that in the sense of we had NHL draft picks. We had guys going to Wisconsin, Denver, Michigan State. I mean, you name it. They were going across the nation in the best colleges. Colin Shields went to Maine, won was the national championship game. I mean, these are guys that went on to have prolific careers in the American League and NHL games and all that stuff, which is the USHL. And then after the change, it kind of, just like you said, it diluted it a little bit. And I think the NA has done a nice job of climbing again, but the USHL kind of took over that top level. And you can see with all the draft picks they have every year.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the top, it's the top junior league in the world. I mean, when it comes to those draft picks. So that's where they really kind of took off, like you said. And the NA has done a good job of getting very solid and being a very big piece of the puzzle. But it was a big landscape change for sure.
So you you go in, you have a good season with Tri-City. I think you played 37 games. I've got your stats right here. So you played 37 games with them, and another good playoff run for you, and then off to the University of Denver.
Yeah, it was a heartbreaker. We had a great team, Bliss Littler and Coach Rudrud. They put, like you said, they went and they got myself, my other teammate who went to Ohio State from our Pittsburgh team. They went all over and they pieced together. It was a special group. You know, we won the Anderson Cup. I think we had one of the best records in the USHL for regular season. It was awesome. You know, everybody was going to college if they could, eligibility wise. We went all the way to the finals, and we ran into Kevin Regan who ended up going to New Hampshire. It was a Boston Bruins draft pick goaltender. And Joe Pavelski, who has an awesome career, and many more, a lot of really good players on the team. But we ran out of gas. They beat us in the finals, and we lost in the Clark Cup championship. So that, you know, but as you know, is those are what you learn from, and you know, I probably learned a ton because we had success in Pittsburgh. I mean, it would have been two storybook going, winning North American League, USHL, and going to college. It was one of those things I think our whole group had to learn from, We had really, really good players, and I did. I still have that fire in my belly talking about the story. I hate losing. I hated losing that. I remember being in the locker room and hearing those fans in Waterloo. I'll never forget that ever in my life. And it's one of those things that motivates you because I took it to the next year and I just wanted to win so bad, you know, so.
How did that next year go for you at Denver? Did you walk right in as the starting goaltender? Or, I mean, I kind of know, but I want to hear your side of it.
So if Denver at the time, which you know and appreciate, is they had a good thing going. They had Wade Dubowitz and Adam Burkle, great goalies that ended up going on playing in the NHL, great careers, really good people. And they play games. You know, they were able to play. They both got in. They almost split for the most part of it. And when I went in, Glenn Fisher was an Edmonton Oilers draft pick goaltender. He was a freshman Burkle senior year. So my year in the USHL, Denver won the national championship.
Right.
And I had everybody saying, oh, nice job jumping on the bandwagon. I'm like, no, I committed the year before. I really didn't. And you know, Jay, like when I grew up in Michigan, I didn't even know what Denver was.
Yeah.
I didn't know the WCHA. I didn't know anything about it. You know, I knew about Hockey East, Maine, and because Maine was in the national championships and stuff like that, but all I knew about was University of Michigan, Michigan State, Bowling Green, guys, teams around us, Lake State. And when I got exposed to that, it opened up the whole thing. We didn't have the social media like today.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they had won the year before I went in. Glenn Fisher was a sophomore, but only started a handful of games because Berkey ended up playing a bunch of games, and he won the national championship. He had an unreal career. I just spoke to him yesterday. He's a phenomenal person. And then I went in and I played. I was able to play as a freshman. Fish and I we basically split up until the playoffs, and I was awarded a chance to play more games, and we won. It was like I said, when you get those groups and things click and you have the right people that play the right roles, and you just feel that special camaraderie that we now as coaches try and create and harness and get there. But we had it. It was for sure a special group, and that's a special memory.
Yeah, but you caught fire. I mean, it was a special group, and it was awesome that they got that, but you caught fire. To come in as a freshman, you were MVP, right, for the tournament, for the championship? Was that the year?
Yeah, I think the MOP award, we'd always joke around. I always joke with Berkey. He was the Frozen Four most outstanding player, but weird how that happened back-to-back.
With two different goals, that's...
Two different seasons, but in the end, same result, right?
Yeah. Well, that's so crazy. So, and who did you guys win the national championship against that year?
I think you're fueling the fire here a little bit with with Jordan, but we this is pretty cool though, and I was sick because I was very fortunate to be a part of the WCHA, which has changed landscape, because of the Big Ten. So we. What was it? I think Minnesota went back-to-back, and then Denver went back-to-back, and then I think Wisconsin won. I mean, it was unbelievable. It's very similar to the NCHC today, right, where they've won, what is it, four or five in a row last national championships. But when we won our year, our final five championship, which was the WCHA playoffs, we played North Dakota in the semis, and then we played CC in the finals, and we won our final five, which was... At that time, we were like, this is as big as the national championship because you're playing all the top 10 teams in the nation.
Right.
You know? And so we won that, and that was huge. Now we had a rebound and go to the regional. We did. We were able to get through the regional. And ironically, I did, you know, Kevin was a great goalie, but I did get a little retribution with him because he played for New Hampshire, and we beat him in the regional championship to go to the Frozen Four. So that kind of healed the wound a little bit, you know, getting there. And that I took that one personal because he was unbelievable. He was the MVP of the USHL playoffs and they beat us and stuff. So we went to the Frozen Four, and ironically, we ended up playing CC in the semifinals and North Dakota in the finals. So all four teams in that regional were WCHA teams.
Yeah.
We owned the Frozen Four that year. So it was pretty cool for the conference.
Yeah, that's unbelievable, and it was so much fun to watch. And then knowing both you and Jordan, but as Utahns, we were drawn to the University of Denver not just because of its proximity, but because we only had like three players out of Utah make NCAA in the history of Utah at that point, and one of them was Brian Konowalczuk, who played and set some records at DU.
Yeah,
and I think he was a Sharks draft pick, and then decided to become a surgeon or an eye doctor or something. So he didn't even go play in the NHL. And then we had Jeff Levy, who was a goaltender, and he played at New Hampshire, I believe. And then we had one more at Vermont. But it was crazy because, you know, obviously we were Denver fans because we'd had a Utah player there, and it was awesome. It was fun to watch, and you were just on fire. I watched you that whole tournament. That was you guys were unreal. All right, so you have I want to jump ahead a little bit. You have a storied career at Denver. Everything goes awesome. And are you drafted by the Islanders, or are you a free agent with the Islanders?
No, it was a free agent. I tell this story because we just had a goalie we drafted. He played for the national program for 2 years, skipped the draft this past year. And, you know, it's a lesson for everybody out there. Like, the draft it's incredible, right, to be drafted out of however many players in the world and to be drafted in seven rounds is unbelievable. But that doesn't mean you don't make the NHL. It doesn't mean you can't get drafted within your 3-year window to get drafted, right? And that's the reality. It's hard in the moment with guys. I've been there where I've sat with two goalies now where they've just slipped out. They've been to the combine. They've been B-rated goalies in the central scouting, all this stuff. Like, the reality is when I finished my last year junior hockey in Tri-City, I think I was 15 or 14 of the 30 North American goalies. Everybody was telling me I was 100% going to get drafted. It could have been in the last round. It could have been anywhere. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I didn't get drafted. And I used that and losing in that championship as just pure motivation to go to college and make the NHL. and I was undrafted. So after my senior year, New York stepped up right away and offered a contract, and I was very fortunate. It's a whole family process because it's so financially, you know, it's an unbelievable investment. It's a time family sacrifice, and I always say that when I was able to sign a first NHL contract and play, it was a family achievement because just so much goes into it, as you know.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I want to, did you ever find out why? I mean, because you're a winner and you've won at all levels. Did you ever find out why guys weren't taking, why you weren't being drafted? Was there something was there something in your draft report, or was there something that came out later, or was it just, you just got overlooked?
Well, I was late. That would have been my last year. So I was a little bit older in the draft, but that doesn't hold them back, right? I think it may just came down to, you know, maybe just the technical side. They didn't think size or the technical side of it, I was sound enough to make that jump. I did not have an advisor.
Okay.
So I think that probably hurt too, you know, because when you go there, you just have the same conversation the other day. I'm like, you got to have somebody that's in between speaking for you, just making sure the message is clear. I think I did everything right. You know, I know my parents and I did. Like, we didn't have a bad reputation. I was always a hard worker, so it was never a character issue. I just think maybe I was older, and maybe that group seemed to be a little thicker for the NHL teams, and they went and drafted other guys. Everybody on that 30-man list got drafted, and then there were about five or six limited-viewing, non-ranked ones that got drafted. So I was bummed. You know what I mean?
I'm going,
man, like, there it was. But I was so fortunate. I was going to the University of Denver. Like, I was totally motivated to say, I'm still going to make it. I still got to do it because that's been the goal. So,
okay, so you end up with the Islanders, and that was a crazy season for the Islanders, especially with goaltenders.
Yep.
And you've got your GM with Garth Snow, who's, you know, kind of legendary the way he ran it at first, and then just with the goalies. DiPietro was the starter that year, is that correct? So this was a weird. So tell me about your first experience with the Islanders, and let's talk about that for a little bit, and then I'll tell you my version of what was going on with the Islanders, because at the time the Utah Grizzlies were the affiliate, and it was so crazy that year. So tell us about you go to training camp that year with the Islanders.
Yeah, I did the whole thing. So I signed the first day at free agency, and that's like. That's a fortunate thing, right? To have a team step up right away. You're not waiting and lingering. You know, I had talked to them a little bit after my junior year, a handful of teams, but the Islanders always were lingering. And I don't know if there was Dubowitz played there, and maybe they had watched Denver. They had a couple other guys that signed through there, but they stepped up, you know, and I was really excited. They had, like you said, Ricky. We knew that he had some injuries. They signed Joey McDonald as the backup, and then Jan Denis signed a 2-year deal. And, you know, when I talked to my agent, and we had a good relationship, very black and white. He was like, listen, go up against this, you know, Jan, the storied American League goalie, great goalie. He's got, you know, a great contract. When you go there and you compete with him, now you're going to look at the same level or better. And that was kind of my mentality everywhere I went in pro. If I could go up against NHL guy that was making however much money, or a guy on a one way, if I could do as good as him and then do better eventually, then I would be valued or seen as a high, you know, at that level. So I took that as a great opportunity to showcase myself and prove myself. And that was my first year right out of college. I went to Bridgeport, and it was very, I think it was like first 2-3 weeks in, Jan went up because Ricky got hurt.
Yep.
And so Jan and Joe were up in the NHL, and I played 6-7 games, and we had a great team. Our Bridgeport team was awesome. I had a great start. I think I was like 5-2, whatever it was, 5-2-1 or whatever, and had really good numbers. But I was like, be honest, I was like, whoa, this is a good level. You know, I'm sitting here still figuring it out. I was feeling confident, and then all of a sudden I got the call, and they called me up. And this is like within the first month or two. I go right up to the NHL, and they switched Jan and I, because I think Jan had a tough start. And they were like, wow, he's doing pretty good in the American League. So boom, I went up real early, and that's just the start of basically me being a human yo-yo for the entire season, because it turned into a up and down game for a lot of us, you know.
Yeah, it was so crazy. Do you remember by chance how many times you got pulled up that season?
I don't remember how many. I know I was up for around, I think it must have been 20 plus games that I was up for. Started two, relieved in one. You know, from your side of things, I was, when I got to 1 point, I was up, like I said, the first month, and then Joey, we were in Boston, and this was a great life lesson. I'm sitting there on the bench in the third period, and we're playing the number one team in the NHL. They had everybody. You name them, they were in the lineup. Savard was still healthy. Kessel was on the team. Chara was young. I mean, this is many years ago in Boston.
Right.
Just they were rolling. You know, they had the whole caboodle there. So we were, I think, one of, if not the worst team in the league. So we were one versus the last or one of the bottom teams. And Joey starts getting shelled in the third period at a sold-out TD Garden, and I'm on the bench, like, freaking out a little bit, because I'm like, I hope he doesn't do this. And there was about, like, 10, 11 minutes left in the third period, and he gets scored again. It was, like, 4-5-1 with, like, 11 minutes left. And I'm looking to my left, and I'm like, no, I'm not looking over at him. You know, I'm like, I should, but I don't want to. I'm like, this could be my chance to play in the NHL, but I don't know if I want this to be it. And I hear something. I look over, and Gordo's over there yelling at me, let's go. You know, and, oh, man, I jumped in there, and it was like, I felt like I was thrown into a beehive, you know, and yeah. The place was going crazy. I remember I made a save, and then Witt fought a guy right in front of my net, and then we went down on a penalty kill, and then it went up, over, elbow in, and I got scored on, like, right away, and it was bad. I got shelled. I think I let in three or four. And they were, you know, it was like a couple power play goals. They just crushed us. And I was crushed. I went to the bus, and I was like, I just played in the NHL, but it was embarrassing. I felt like, so I let the guys down. I did, you know, everybody in my family, but I was like, but I played in the NHL. Like, I got to remember it. And I remember Dougie Wade came and sat next to me on the bus, because he knew I was like, what just happened? He was awesome. And, you know, Billy Garrett, guys like that, older guys, were just awesome. And I got sent down that night.
Oh, wow.
I got sent down that night. Gordo apologized, said, you know, he just tried to make a decision to see if he could get some spark, but it was, you know, he said it was a mistake. I still appreciate him putting me in, you know, because it was the NHL, and I got a chance to get scored on by Kessel and certain guys, you know.
Right.
And then, you know, not to be super long on it, but I think what the point, you know, is there was about a stretch of 3 to 4 weeks where I would go up, back up a game in the NHL. I would drive down to Bridgeport. I would go back up a game in the American League, and then I would be called up the next day, back up a game, sent down. I'd go on a road trip for 2-3 games, back up, and then sent down. So I barely practiced for like 3+ weeks. And I was struggling, you know, struggling to figure out the levels, because it's different. I mean, it clearly is different. The NHL and the American League, it's crisper, the shots, the speed, everything about it, you got to adapt, you know. And I'm just trying to get practice time for my first pro year, but I'm not complaining, because I'm living the dream that we all want to be a part of, right? So I was trying to hang on. My game was all over the place. I remember in the American League, I didn't have a start for now 3+ weeks. We're going on 4 weeks. I went to All-Star break for 4 days. I left my stuff back home, and I knew they were going to call. So I literally didn't have anything with me. I'm in Florida with my cousins. They call. They have to go get my stuff at Bridgeport and fly me to Atlanta, and my bag meets me in Atlanta. And I walk in with, like, my cousin's suit, you know, and he had, like, penny loafers. He didn't dress up ever in his life. And there I am I'm walking. I had a cab at the front door. People are trying to give me tickets to the game. I'm like, no, I'm going to have a front row seat. You know, when I'm walking in with bags. And the guys all knew at that point how it was going. So point being, it led to the Utah experience where they brought in a goalie from Dallas to get 2 weeks of games in at the American League level because he wasn't playing in the NHL. And they told me that they wanted me to go down to Utah and play and take a two-week window and play games and get it together, you know, get games in and go from there. And I told somebody this the other day. I said it was the best thing that ever could have happened to go down. What did I play, like 8 games or something? It was like 8 or something.
Yeah, it's your stats say 9 games, basically 92% save average, yeah.
Yeah, 9 games in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember. It's crazy.
And it was unreal just to be able to play again. And that group was hilarious. We only had a certain amount of guys. And I love the coaches. My time there was awesome. I loved Utah, everything about it. I think they did. I was there for the pooch night where they put the
pooch on the pond.
Yeah. Pooch on the pond. Yes, I was like, what is going on here? But it was like incredibly cool. The fans are great. I got to see the signatures of all the Olympians underneath. What was it? Fast Eddie and Plando. There's some fun characters in the room.
Oh yeah.
And then I almost got in a fight the night when I was leaving. There was a little bit of a tilt in the game and I finished the game and then I red-eyed back to Bridgeport. That was it.
So a couple stories about while you were here, and one, see if you remember this the way I remember it. So I was your backup for a lot of that. And, one day I'm like, I take you to lunch. I don't even remember what's going on. I don't even buy you lunch. We go out, and me, you, and my son go to lunch. And take you to Francesco's. Not exactly, you know, I mean, it's a great restaurant. It's good food. It's especially good after practice food. But, you know, it's not like. But anyway, we go back to my house, and I just remember Tegan firing up the Xbox. Because that's all the players that either stayed with us or whatever came back to our house. Tegan would always play them in Xbox. And somehow on the Xbox, we realized that it was your birthday. Do you remember this? And I'm like,
I don't. I think I do now. I remember the story. I remember being with him, and I remember playing Xbox. I remember our time at your house for sure. But, I just don't know if I remember the birthday part.
And I'm like, what the heck? It's your birthday. I would have at least bought you Francesco's if I would have known it was your birthday. You hadn't said a word about it. But the other the craziest thing about that is so. Us being the Islanders affiliate, while all that stuff's going on with you're getting moved up and back and forth, and we're the Grizzlies are going through 4 or 5 goalies at the same time.
Yeah.
And literally, I'm just on the bench for like 3 weeks, just on the bench, and then there's another starting goalie, and then there's somebody else in, and then you come in for a while. And when you came in, I don't know, I think I told you this, but they came to me and said, hey, do you want to go e-bug in Bridgeport? And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I've never been offered to be pulled up to the AHL. I mean, I was in the AHL when the Grizzlies were in the AHL. I was the e-bug then. But it was just weird. It was weird to me that there was so much going on with goaltenders that, like with the Islanders, that they offered me to go up. Or maybe that was right before you came. Maybe that was before they signed the kid from Dallas or brought that kid from Dallas in. But I just remember going, how bad is it that they're pulling an e-bug up from the East Coast League? I mean, I've got like 13, 14 games this year on the bench, and now I'm going to go e-bug in the A. It was crazy.
Do you remember the equipment manager, Lenny DeCassette? He helped out. He helped out the Islanders.
Yep,
Lenny would he would e-back for Bridgeport, when I would get called up to the Islanders. So Lenny and I would literally pass each other on the highways, me going up to Long Island, and he would go back up in the American League. And it was nuts. It was unbelievable.
That is insane. So insane.
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah. And then you get traded at the end of that season? Is that, how do you end up in Atlanta?
Or what? Did not get signed. What happened was through all the chaos, and you remember Nathan Lawson, great goalie, was with Utah. When I was bouncing up and down, Nathan got called up to Bridgeport, and he played the games. So when I was all over the place, Lozzie went in and played great. And yeah. He was really good and had a great run with Bridgie. And then when my, you know, all the ups and downs settled and I got sent back down, Laws and I finished the year out, and then I think he started the first two games, and then I finished playoffs. And then they decided that summer, they drafted two big Euros, and then they were like, we're going to re-sign Lawson. And I was like, wow, like, great. You know, I was like, I knew that my year was affected, but not complaining because I'm getting called up. I just wasn't able to manage the consistency and say, like, hey, I'm the guy, and they went in a different direction.
Yeah, you're so, just a victim of the victim of circumstance there.
Right, yeah, and I'm like, but I still got unbelievable experience, which helped because Atlanta was another team that was in the mix, but the year I graduated, they had, I think, three goalies in their system for the minors, and they did not have a contract offer, but they did talk to my agent and stuff. So then the following year, they were open, and right away they called, and I signed the first. And once again, very lucky, you know, going, oh, my gosh, I was a little nervous because I didn't get the qualifying offer. And boom, I signed with Atlanta, and I shifted over. Yeah.
All right. So, and then you have a pretty good career. I mean, it's cool. Like you got NHL games, you got tons of AHL games, and you got to play. And at some point, you decide you're going to retire and become a coach. And we haven't really even talked about what you're doing now. But you go back to what's now the Chicago still, you become an assistant coach there, and then Nebraska Omaha as an assistant coach, and then Miami University last season as the head coach. Or were you the head coach?
Yeah, associate. It's a nice little term to say, you're a glorified assistant.
Okay.
but no, I mean, it's appreciative in many ways when a coach offers that to you because, you know, you get it's just responsibility. It's just an acknowledgement for your work and obviously pay and stuff like that. So guys that are associate head coaches have a lot of good friends in college that have worked really hard. I'll give a shout out to Jared DeMichael, former goalie. He is an associate head coach. I always chirp him a little bit because it's kind of a glorified assistant in many ways. But you know, guys like that have put in their time. They've worked very hard. And, you know, I was appreciative of Rico offering that to me. So now
you are the official head coach. You're the guy. You've put in your time, and now you're the head coach in the USHL of the Des Moines Buccaneers, a team that again has a ton of Utah connections. I would say more than any other team in the USHL. We've had 5, 6, 7 players go through Des Moines. So that's awesome. Another team that's huge for us, including Trevor Lewis. So, yep. That's our flagship right now. We put our for Trevor. So, one of the things I really want to talk to you about, and something that's important here for Utah, and you and I were kind of glancing over what you were doing this summer with your camps, is now you're a head coach in the USHL, and we have so many players in Utah that are trying to get out of here now, and I don't mean to glaze over everything that you've done because, I mean, you did a ton. There was a ton from you going to Atlanta to this point. But this is, I mean, we really got to pick your brain here so that we can help our Utah listeners and players here. Talk to me about how you go about as a USHL coach, and because you were in the USHL for the last few years and even the NCAA. Where do you go look for players? How do you get guys on your radar?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. And to be as quick as possible, I just want to thank everybody along that way from the Steel, Dan Muse, my head coaches with Nashville, giving me the opportunity to be a coach, you know, and be an assistant coach and have a lot of responsibilities. Gabby in Omaha and Rico there in Miami giving me opportunities at the college level. And then to the Buccaneers, the Des Moines organization, like you said, it's such a history, the unbelievably decorated organization in the USHL and for ownership and management, everything included. Like, I'm really excited. And, Jay, I got to give a shout-out to my staff because I did a podcast a couple weeks ago, and Ledge, Lindy, and Sam, and everybody, Nate, and the whole crew, Paula, Rick, Guy, and Jimmy. These guys are incredible. So back to the big question you're asking is, how do you get there? What do we look for? So in the USHL and juniors, we're obviously looking at those younger guys from these different levels, from midget hockey. There's U15, U16, there's U18. There's different leagues that are, I guess, highlighted over others. That's fair to say. Tier one elite, high performance hockey league, different things like that. Then you got Minnesota high school hockey. So we know where the breeding grounds come from. So we're watching those things, pretty intensely. Now, why I say that is for a player coming from wherever it is. I mean, right now there's a couple Florida teams that are popping up. Is they're getting exposure. They're trying to go into these tournaments and compete against those guys. So if you have organizations that do go into those tournaments and play games against these particular, you know, like you said, the Honey Bakes or these teams that have a little bit of a priority list of teams and players to watch for colleges and USHL and all junior leagues, do it. Because when you have the due diligence and the sharp, detailed recruiters or evaluators, they're watching all those games. And I don't care personally where you come from. If you're going to separate yourself on the ice, you got to go up against them, try and get into those showcases. Now, if not, like you were asking, there's camps in the summers. There's the USHL Combine, and I think from Doug Christensen, who's now a head coach in pro hockey, he worked really hard with the commissioner when I was in the league prior to put these combines to a high level where they invite kids from all over, Utah, from New York to Florida, all over. And that's one of those credible showcases where you're going to have all the USHL teams there watching you.
Right.
Stuff like that. And that's where you'll know and decipher potentially against, like, oh, Johnny Two Shoes camp of, you know, exposure or whatever, where you're like, well, is that a real camp versus, well, a branded USHL camp or a combine or these tournaments that have the branded teams in them and stuff like that. And that's where you're going to say, oh, I know colleges are going to be there, or I know junior teams are going to be there because we're going up against this talent, or this talent might be there, and I'm going to put myself in that pool as well and go after it.
Do you guys ever look at WSHL players?
Yes, they will be recruited. It just depends on the, the USHL team will look into it. I don't know. Is there a percentage, you know, of a draft of how many of those players were drafted or if drafted in the USHL?
No, I
don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah. And I honestly don't know either. I know that the majority of the players that come into that league ended up staying in that league. And now they are putting guys in NCAA Division III. They just had their first ever NCAA Division I commit last year. So I know that league's rising, but I just didn't know where, if it was on the USHL radar at all. And then I have one more question about this, is that we have teams that have gone to those big tournaments, and we've had Utah teams that have gone in and just gotten shelled 15-1 or 10-1.
Right.
Are those guys, you're still looking at those guys, though? I mean, they're still going to those games?
I do. Like, if they're going and they're... I remember watching Tampa Scorpions, and I really liked their goalie. I liked they're about 3-4 forwards. I watched them play in one game. They kind of hung into one game, and then they got blown out at the end. This is just an example, and this is when I was in the USHL. I was like, I like these guys. So I went back, and I found their tournaments. So when did this Florida team go up and play in our territory, anywhere kind of around the Midwest and stuff, and I would find their schedule, and I went and watched him again, and he was good. And these guys were good. This was a couple good pieces. I'm like, oh, interesting. Then I found out later on that they were playing two random scrimmage games versus Compuware, who ended up being the national champion that year, and they got blown out both games, like killed. But I watched those guys again, and I liked them, and I had two of them and invited them out to our Chicago Steel practice. And they practiced with us. And then from there, they got in touch with the USHL and kind of things started to go in that direction. I do know one of them played in the North American League last year and just got drafted in the top 10 in the USHL and has a college commitment.
Wow.
So that was a kid I saw. Yeah, that was a kid I randomly saw in one of those showcases, and they got killed. You know, they just didn't have the depth, right, versus these other teams.
Right, but and that's what the Utah teams have, right? They have one line.
Right. And you see those guys, and you check them off, or you go, wow, this kid was pretty good on the third line, played a hard role. But then you have that database of that player, and then as they progress and move up or move on, you'll always know or have seen them. So all you want to do is separate yourself on that paper and do whatever it takes to make sure you get that recruiter to see you, and then that's on them to follow up, you know, and do their right. homework and stuff like that. And you just gotta keep putting yourself out there.
When you find a player that you're interested in, you said you look up their schedule. Do you ever look up that player's social media?
Yes. Yeah, it's a great question, and I'll have that conversation with our players. So even in juniors or in college, you're investing a lot of time in, and this is the basis of scholarship, right? Scholarship or spot on your team, because you only have a certain amount of players and you have a certain amount of scholarships. Oh, I'm definitely going on their Twitter, making sure things are checking off, they're not being obnoxious or, you know, misrepresenting themselves. And in juniors, we'll do the same thing. It's just a bigger pool and it's a draft, because you don't know if you're going to get that kid at that particular draft in the USHL, where college is you're picking, recruiting, and hoping then they pick you back, right? So there's a little bit of flip side to it. College, definitely looking through all their social media stuff just to see what they are all about, what they like, and in that regard. But in the USHL, if we have targets we like, we'll do the same thing. Just make sure things check off and they're living a good life, you know.
Right. Do you find now as a USHL coach, are you running into having to compete against the CHL now that they're paying for college down the road? Or is it an easy sell for you recruiting Americans saying, hey, you play here and now you get 4 more years to play college somewhere?
It's always a battle. What I don't understand is and I say this honestly, I don't know how CHL teams offer the same thing that USHL and college, the USHL and college path can, because when they offer a 4-year college package to a player in major junior, that doesn't mean you're getting 4 years, because anybody who signs that and goes and plays major junior, you probably want to play pro hockey, right?
Right.
You want to go after it. You're making a decision that's taking away, just like you said, 4 more years of your career. Because junior hockey, USHL and OHL and WHL and the Q are the same level. It's the same age group. We just don't get players from the NHL that sign sent back to the USHL. They'll either play a year in the USHL, 2 years in the USHL, and go to college for a year or two, and they're gone. Our guys are in college, which is a higher level than any junior level. College is higher and better than the CHL and the USHL. It's a small margin, being the age smaller, being younger, but it's a higher level. Junior hockey across the board is junior hockey. But for them to say to a young player, we're giving you a 4-year education package, whatever it might be, I don't even know the details. But when you sign a pro contract and you play a certain amount of games or you go on, that's gone. That's part of the deal, is when you go and pursue a pro contract, you lose your education package.
Right.
So if you're going to pursue it, you're going all in. And then you might end up a year or two, and then if you're about to expire, they end up at a CIS, a Canadian institution, and go play Canadian university, and that's very good. There's some awesome universities there, and hockey's pretty good, but it's nowhere near the level of the NCAA. It's not the same exposure. It's not the same level of players, and some of the educations are up and down, but it's a route to me that is riskier. Higher end players, they have a path, they know they're going to go, they know they're going to do well, they know they're going to be drafted and signed, okay. But other than that, you are limiting the time you have to develop, and you're not giving yourself a sure shot for education, because if you pursue it and you go play 3-4 years in the American League, you're 3-4 years away from anything educationally or job wise.
Right.
You got to hit reset. You got to hit reset again. And how old are you at that point? Oh, I got to go back to school, or I got to start working again. And you got to start at square one. And that's the reality.
That's great insight, man. That's great insight.
Yeah, you know,
One of the things I've been saying, and we've got players here, for the first time in our history, we've got players that are playing in the dub and that are making it in those leagues, and it's great to see them. And you know what? Maybe not all college or all kids want to go to college. Maybe that's not on the writing, you know, right, for a lot of kids, and that's fine. And the dubs, and that's amazing hockey, and it's great to see it. But man, it's just been amazing having you on the show, and your insight is so needed here. And I just, we're out of time. I got people lined up outside the studio ready for their sessions. So I gotta get going. But man, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on the show and giving us your insight. And once you play in Utah and you were with the Grizzlies, these fans still know who you are and they still follow you, and we're all rooting for you. And good luck in Des Moines this year, man. We're gonna be watching and rooting, and we're hoping that pretty soon we get a couple more Utah players out there with you.
I love that, and I just want to say thanks to you because you've been a great friend and always keeping in touch throughout my career, and that means a lot. And I agree. Once I went there and was a part of the Grizzlies, I just felt a part of it. I always remember the stories and the times there. It's a great place. It's a great fan base. And I wish from youth hockey all the way up to pro hockey in Utah that players continue to work hard and go after their goals, and hopefully they're Buccaneers one day.
Yep, that's what we're hoping. We're on our way up. Peter Menino, awesome guest, and once again, good luck. And for everybody else, we'll be back again next week. That is the Utah Puck Report.